Welcome to Loading the Bar with physical training experts Parker McBride and Matt Wasko. Our Fit Lifestyle podcast covers the science of nutrition and fitness, together with the challenges we all face to be disciplined. We'll guide you through the minefields of fads and gimmicks and all manner of BS that tempt us in today's fitness world. Ready to begin? Then let's start loading the bar.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Loading the Bar podcast. Parker and Matt here, back with you guys for another episode.
Episode 45.
45. That's a good one.
45. That's pretty crazy. I'd say next week will be 1 year.
Yeah, we'll be right at 1 year.
Yeah.
This is last episode before Christmas.
Matt, so Merry Christmas.
That's right. Merry Christmas. Matt, are you all ready for your Christmas in your house?
I am ready for my Christmas. I started before Thanksgiving buying presents. So
started. Have you ended yet?
Well, I bought all the presents I'm going to buy. My wife's still buying. I think we bought something for all the kids. I got my wife, I can't say that.
Be careful.
Yeah, Christmas hasn't arrived yet, so I can't say on the... So I got my wife something pretty special. And then what's funny about it is that, so I spent a little money on my wife this Christmas, and then my son, he calls me up and he goes, what did you get? And I'm like, well, I got this. And he goes, well, I got that.
Oh.
I'm like, oh, you're kidding me. I said, well, I'll come home and we'll compare. So I'm looking at what he bought her and I'm like, he outspent me.
Oh.
Yeah. He spent a lot on his mom. And I'm like, dude, you're trying to make your dad look bad?
That could be awkward.
Yeah. So, but he bought, what I bought was comparatively to, he bought her two different items.
Hmm.
So I said, don't worry about it. She's going to love it. And what I got, is something she wanted. So it'll work out.
Well, good.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
So last week, we did our usual Chiefs predictions. Chiefs played the Browns in Cleveland, and they handled them pretty easily.
Yeah.
We both predicted a win. They did win. Patrick Mahomes suffered an ankle injury, which was a little scary at first.
Yeah.
But here we are on Saturday. They actually play coming up today, and he's fully cleared to play. So we'll see how that goes as the Chiefs host the Houston Texans today.
Yeah. Houston Texans, and you said they Houston Texans are playoff bound.
I believe so, yeah. They're winning their division, and I don't know exactly what their record is, but they got a decent team.
Mm-hmm. So I guess there was a question, and you probably know this better than me, that there was a question, should they sit Patrick Mahomes out? Because they've got the division home game locked up, right?
Yes. You're asking my opinion?
Mm-hmm.
Under no circumstances should they sit him.
Yeah.
That's my opinion on it.
Because they would lose momentum?
Because they still haven't locked up a first-round bye in the playoffs. And that's most important.
Okay, yeah, that is important.
And until you have that locked up, I think if he can play, he should play.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if he was legitimately hurt to the point where he couldn't play, then he's not playing anyway.
Yeah.
But if he can play, you don't hold him out just to hold him out.
100%, yeah.
And so there's a chance that if they can win this game and the Bills lose, they would lock up the bye, and then he could rest the next couple weeks.
Right.
So they just got to keep winning, and he's got to keep playing. If they can get that bye, he'll have plenty of rest time before the playoff game.
Sounds good. Well, I'm a Chiefs fan. I'm just not as followed as close as my son does, but I'm going to predict. Was it Houston?
Houston, yeah.
At Houston.
Oh, no, at Kansas City.
Man.
Kickoff is in about 80 minutes from this moment.
See, I'm one game behind you?
Yes. And there's
three left. Well, I know what you're picking.
There's three left. I have not changed my pick the entire year.
No, you haven't. So I have to pick against the Chiefs because I know you will never pick them to lose. Unless they're in the play. You might pick them to lose in the playoffs. I don't know. You might not. See, I was trying to be... I mean, if you look at how this team's played, the fact that they only got one loss is pretty amazing. I mean, I don't know how they're winning, you know, field goals bouncing off the inside of the goalpost. I don't know. What are you going to predict? Tell me what you're picking.
Yeah, I'll go first. I'll give you the chance to think about it and deviate. So what I think this is going to be a close game. I do think they're going to pull it out as they pull out all the games except one before this year. I think 23-20. Chiefs, 23-20, a narrow win by a field goal.
I think an injured Patrick Mahomes is a great Patrick Mahomes. He seems to play well when he's got an injury. Maybe it might be his best game. Okay, I'm going to pick the Chiefs, and I'm going to pick 28-27.
Oh, 28-27. Yeah. Okay. Slightly more high scoring.
Yeah.
So you're not making up a game on me this week.
No, I just know if I pick them to lose, I'm going to drop two games back.
Well, we'll see what happens. By the time you guys listen to this podcast, you will know what happened.
Yes, 100%. So, 100%.
All right, well, we dive into our Fit Focus segment now. We have interesting thing today we found. Article that reads, the headline reads, "Woman receives pig kidney transplant, walks out of hospital days later."
Crazy.
That kind of grabbed my attention when I saw that. I thought, I got to look into this. What is going on? And essentially what happened is there was a woman in Alabama who needed a kidney transplant. Not uncommon. And usually what we have when people need a kidney transplant is they look for a donor who has a matching, matching blood type, whatever, so the kidney's compatible, and a human has to donate a kidney. But this one was a gene-edited pig kidney.
Is this something that was grown?
They said it was the seventh pig organ transplant that has been completed by surgeons. I'm not sure if it was grown or not. I think it came like directly from a pig, and I wonder if they did something to it like before they put it in there. We'll walk through this article and we'll see. Okay. But of course, that would make me a little nervous because you don't know for sure whether your body's going to accept the transplant of the kidney whenever it gets put in.
Right. Right. But I guess what's happening here is that you said it's genetically modified pig kidney, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that makes me think that they genetically modified this pig from its initial before it was born.
Oh, you mean like they have genetically modified pigs that they're growing? So basically, I have heard about that before.
Mm-hmm.
And they can grow genetically modified pigs that are part pig and part human. And the organs and the DNA is a close enough match that you can transplant to humans.
Okay.
And like I said, it doesn't look like it says exactly where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
They just said that out of the seven organ transplants that have been performed, pig organ transplants, this is the only one that has worked to the extent that the lady was able to walk out of the hospital.
Okay.
So this is essentially the first time that they've done seven. It doesn't say what it says. The last six were maybe moderately successful, but unable to return the person to their normal health and living standards.
Okay.
Whereas this case, she was able to just walk out of the hospital. And they said now the focus is immunology to make sure her immune system doesn't reject the kidney. It's accepted it so far, and she's up and able and walking. But you know, there's a certain period of time with organ transplants where before you're out of the woods. So the article also says there are about 100,000 people awaiting an organ transplant each year. 80,000 of them are kidneys. And they said eventually the hope is to extend this technology to other organs besides kidneys. And the quote from the doctor doing the transplant, he says, "This is the future."
Yeah, I see here it says, you know, the reason they're doing this, that the way forward in the future, this is going to be a big deal, and we can get past the rejections.
Yeah, so what they found is that if they grew the organ in a lab, that the rejection rate was way too high. It simply didn't work. And they had to have a physical actual being, an actual living animal, in order for the transplant to work. And so they started growing these hybrid animals, genetically modified. They modified them at the embryonic level, and then it created a hybrid of a human and a pig. And then they take the kidney or the organ out of that animal. They call it xenotransplantation.
Okay.
And that's what they've now begun doing. And this is the first instance where they have tried it and it's been successful.
So we know this raises questions. Right?
It raises a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Because the article, it talks so much about, oh, the lady's, her, you know, her standard of living is back. She's still alive. She didn't die. It's so exciting. And it is, but it doesn't talk a lot about the significance of what they've done.
Well, there's a couple of questions to lay on the table. One is, are we playing God? Two, I'm surprised animal rights activists aren't all over this because they're breeding a pig simply to kill it for its organs. And
yes, but see, here's the thing. It's not exactly a pig.
100%. Yeah.
It's genetically modified to become more like a human so that the organs will match. Because a directly pig organ usually doesn't take.
Right.
It has to be, they found now that they can genetically modify it and that it will take.
Right.
So it's not really a pig.
What is it?
It's not really a human. It's kind of an in-between.
What are we creating here, a monster?
Well,
some type of creature that, you know, we're have to make up?
It's not natural.
No, it's not natural.
You know, it's similar to the vein of the way that, you know, lots of things can be genetically modified.
Yeah.
Right? They have it now to where if you go in for like IVF or fertility treatments and stuff, they can pull out eggs and sperm cells, and they can essentially give you the exact genetics that you want in your IVF baby.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I think at this point that technology is extremely expensive. So
yeah,
you may have celebrities and things that are using this, but it's not available to the average Joe probably.
Right.
But they can basically decide before a human is conceived what genetics that you want them to have, and they can pick and choose that. And so it's not really surprising that they're doing that in animals as well and altering the genes.
So this is it's the slippery slope mentality. When is too far, right? When are they going to go too far and start creating complete individual creatures, you know, or some type of, I mean, can these things, these hybrid pigs, human pigs, can they live on their own for a period of time?
Well, I mean, and this article doesn't say. It might be worth going down a rabbit hole to see. But, yeah. I mean, it doesn't say anything about where they came from. It doesn't say anything about where they are, how they live, where they live. None of that.
So that's those are all very important questions.
Those are very important. And you're right. You would think that the animal rights activists would be all over this, but they're not really. And, you know, if you could argue, you know, we are meat eaters.
Mm-hmm.
We are carnivores.
Mm-hmm.
We believe very strongly in the responsible use of animals for our own health and benefits.
Right.
We will raise animals to slaughter to eat for that purpose.
Right.
Right. So then you ask yourself, okay, so raising an animal in order to take its organs.
Well, I personally don't have a problem with the slaughter of the animal. If there's a great benefit, because we eat animals for survival, but
this was for survival.
Right. It is for survival. Right. But it makes me, I ask the question of like, where's the animal rights about this? You know, maybe they are upset. I don't know. But where are they on this issue? Because, you know, I don't share their ideologies. But there's this interesting things that happen with these organizations that they pick and choose their fights, you know, and sometimes it doesn't make sense. You know, it's like I would think that they would be upset about this. Now, regardless, outside of why I have not heard anything from them, there is other questions about should we be doing this? And is there a limit to this ability? And should we be considering that? Now, science is never going to limit themselves. They'll push the envelope as far as that, you know, the culture will accept it, right? So.
Well, and I find it very interesting that, so this article was published December 19th. And obviously, if they have been working on this technology and this science for some time, which they have.
Yeah.
In order to get to this point where you're doing a transplant,
yeah,
you've been working
on
it for a very long time. It's been relatively unknown to the general population that anything like this was in process.
Right.
And then now that it's happened, you know, it's dropped on the 19th, which, a couple days ago? Yeah. Article dropped 2 days ago and haven't really heard anybody talking about it.
Yeah.
I kind of had to do some searching for some recent news before I found it pop up. Oh, well, that's interesting. Read into it. And it didn't really say a whole lot, and it doesn't really have any links or anything in here to say, hey, do you want to read about it further? It's very vague and broad. I don't know. I wonder if it's purposefully that way so that we don't know the whole story of exactly what is taking place.
Well, I know that from a from a Christian perspective, and specifically from, you know, Catholic theology, this is a no-no, right? This is a no, you know. So it's kind of like, do you achieve? Does the ends justify the means? Right. Sometimes there's guidelines that God gives us. Because you have the ability to do it, does that mean you should? Okay. So we know it from some aspects, the result of an action is immediate, and the destruction of it seems apparent. Right. But that's not the case for everything. Sometimes we make decisions, and the destruction of it isn't for quite some time. Because it doesn't come in a physical destruction. It comes in a breakdown of society's type of destruction. So, you know, that's why we have to kind of trust the, you know, what the parameters that God has given us that says, it doesn't, I mean, it, you know, it helps me. It's kind of like IVF, right? Well, if people don't understand IVF, IVF is the implementation of many fertilized eggs, and almost 100%, I mean, a very high, I think it's over 90% of the eggs that are put in, they know are going to die. Okay. So only a few, one, two are going to take on average. So knowing that, that makes it immoral, right? But then the end result is, well, I got this child. How could it be immoral? Right. So, you know, people, that's what I'm saying is like people need, they look at the end and they don't consider the crime that took place to get there, the breakdown of what's natural to get there. And they don't realize that that opens the door to a great many other evils that they can't foresee. And that's why sometimes we... You ever heard the statement that sometimes we come to understand the ways of God through obedience? A lot of people want to understand before they follow God. That's not the way that works, right? A lot of times we follow God, and through obedience we come to understand, right? So, and that's a big problem with the world. It's like, I'll follow God when he proves himself to me. And this is why these things happen, is that people, they're not going to be obedient to what would be immoral or maybe unethical, because they don't have any ecclesiastical or godlike figure in their life.
Yeah, I think my biggest question about this would be, what sort of genetic modification did they do to the pig in order to get it to the point where the kidney would be taken by human?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I think that could be dangerous, right? Did we take a pig and did we tweak a couple of small things, or did we take a pig and did we basically make it not a pig?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do you remember, well, have you ever watched the movie called The Island?
Island of Dr. Moreau?
No, it's called The Island, and I can't remember. Scarlett Johansson is in it. I can't remember the male lead actor's name, but we watched it in school, and so that's how I found it. And then I've watched it a couple times since then because it's kind of scary, and it's, I mean, back then, that was probably 10 years ago for sure, 10 to 15 years ago when I watched it, and there was nothing like this happening. But basically, the way the movie works is there is a company that started a insurance program where celebrities, professional athletes, rich people could buy insurance on their health. And what the concept was that they would grow a clone.
Oh, wow.
To the person. So yeah. They would take their DNA, they would grow a cloned human that was exactly the same. And the idea behind it was, if they ever needed a replacement organ or tissue or anything like that, they could go to this clone human, pull off whatever they need, give it to the real person, and then they could keep living, right? It's not really life insurance, kind of like a life health insurance type thing.
Right.
And they weren't really telling, in the movie, they weren't really telling the people that were buying the insurance what they were doing.
Uh-huh.
They were telling them they were like growing the organs in a lab or something. But then in reality, they were creating full-blown clone humans. They were living lives, and they were keeping them in underground bunkers and stuff, like super sci-fi, like conspiracy type stuff.
Oh, wow.
But then you read things like this and you think, wait a minute, it doesn't sound that far off.
No, I mean, and that's what I'm saying is that, you know, it's it's kind of going down that slippery slope. Where does it stop? Right. That's why there's boundaries, because if you always are going to allow the boundaries to be determined by man, there will be no boundaries.
Yeah.
Right. It'll go forever. And that will be man's self-destruction. Is that man needs, because of our greed and our selfishness, they need boundaries. And in boundaries, we actually have freedom, right? in the world's view, boundaries are being like not free. But they don't understand that we become slaves to our own decisions, and that the reason that we have these boundaries is for our benefit and for our good. So, you know, that's where, you know, these type of situations, I'm not going to say, you know, all genetically modification is wrong, because I'm not the one to answer that question. But I do know when it comes to manufacturing perfect humans, that's not looked upon favorably.
Where would you say that the line should be drawn, right? Because on one hand, let's take one extreme, which is that we believe we should be able to clone humans, use their DNA, clone them, grow identical humans, and harvest them when needed to help keep the main human alive, right? And on the other hand, there's I don't think that any intervention should be taken to prevent somebody from losing their life, whether it's organ transplants from donations, whether it's even simple medications that could keep someone alive, life support type things. Where do you sort of draw the line? If one extreme is zero intervention ever, which obviously we're way past that in our society, and the other extreme is we're like cloning people and harvesting them. Like, where is the line in the middle?
I think you got to answer a basic question. There's a question that needs to be determined, a premise. And the premise is, can I manipulate an embryo to not have cancer? Or can I manipulate an embryo that's not going to have an enlarged prostate like the rest of the family? You know, and the reality is that if we think about all the podcasts that we've done, we have a lot of things that exist in the last 100 years that didn't exist for thousands of years before, right? So if you're creating clones, or you're creating someone who's going to be not be predisposition to, or not in a position where they're going to get cancer, or they're not going to have prostate issues, you know, that's one thing. But if you're going to develop, I think you have to consider that it's not, if you do keep, let's say this at the extreme situation, you have the humans that are, they have the human in reserve, the organs in reserve. Let's say that's the extreme situation. Well, if the food's still the same, the organ's still going to fail because it's still going to get infected, right? It's not so much that the perfect humans that we're creating are the problem. It's that you're not going to get away from that. Ultimately, it will, over time, if the person keeps eating that way, and in America, it's hard to get away from because there's not that much food, that human is continually going to have the same issues without change in their diet, right? So when it comes to, because that's kind of the question, am I creating the, now here's the other side. Are you going to try to create humans that run faster? Are stronger, you know?
Like superhumans.
I 100% think that's wrong. But
do you think that's already happening?
I wouldn't be surprised. That wouldn't surprise me at all. I would say, yes, it's probably already happening. And knowing what we know about... I'm going to lean towards yes, okay, especially in the last 5 years. If someone came and told me that, you know, that's not happening, that's not possible yet, okay. But I don't know. There seems to be a lot of, we've crossed a lot of lines, and we have a lot of technology now.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's kind of a convoluted answer to your question.
No, this is a very deep topic.
Yes.
And we could go so many directions with it. But interesting to just bring up. But I have one last question. Real quick before we get into our main topic. Would a cloned human have a soul?
Oh, man. Well, every time a sperm meets an egg, they've discovered, and this has been proven through actual documentation and putting a camera in there. Every time a sperm meets an egg, there is an explosion of light they have not been able to explain, right? Now, I'm going to say that that's God. That's God at that moment, okay? So I guess the question would be is when you create a cloned human, if that light still happens, then it still has a soul, right? Because the closest we know that we can get to cloning is probably, and I don't mean we're pursuing it, but the closest relationship might be a twin, right? Mm-hmm. A very identical twin. And that twin still is individual as anybody else. Right. It doesn't matter if they look alike or they have the same mannerisms and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they share a lot of commonalities. They almost seem indistinguishable from each other. I would still think that it would be the same with a clone. Right. And I think in some ways we might clone someone, and in calling them a clone would be a disservice because they're still completely an individual person, even if they're created in a petri dish. So that's my perspective on that.
Would the existence or non-existence of a soul in an individual determine the morality behind things like this, organ transplants?
Mean if there is a soul, I think God binds himself to our reality to regardless if the way that, for example, you know, we've talked about, cohabitation, and guys, I'm just getting very deep here. Cohabitation, which is married, living together before marriage, right? Well, if you engage in relations, you can get a person pregnant. That child is a gift of God, right? Does that change the nature of that cohabitation? Does that suddenly make that cohabitation good? No. And so, you know, God binds himself to the actions we create. It doesn't mean the actions are free from sin. So I think it's the same thing with, you know, this reality. It's just because a soul was created doesn't change the method of how it got, the outcome. You know, if we're going to play God and we're going to, you know, put these things in a petri dish and it does create a soul, well, you know, God is not going to, you know, it's kind of like if I shoot a bullet at that person, God's not going to intervene and stop that bullet. You know, it's once we commit an act, God has bound himself to the reality of the world to function.
Well, to your point, every human that has ever existed has been created through an intentional act of man, other than Adam and Eve,
mm-hmm.
and Jesus Christ, right? Every other person that's been conceived through male-female relationship, there's an intentional act there,
right?
Which is, you know, at least on one side,
yes,
right? There is an intentional act to create that human, and it still results in a process of God creating the soul,
right?
Right. So even in a case of a cloned human, there may be an intentional act by a human to put that life into existence,
mm-hmm.
but there still can be an act by God to create the soul.
Correct.
Right. Can a human exist without a soul?
No.
Can it be partially human?
Well,
see, so yeah, it's like so many questions.
Yeah, yeah. That's the whole pig question.
We may have to follow this and see how this goes, dig into it a little deeper, mm-hmm. and it might have to be a returning topic at some point.
Yeah, and I'll try to, you know. And then you get in the whole question is like, do animals go to heaven? I will. Now, you know my friend Steve, right?
Yes.
Right. So I have a contention that animals don't go to heaven, and he has a contention that they do.
I would love to hear his perspective because I think I agree with you on this one.
Yeah. So, and I was surprised by that because he's more traditional than me. So, yeah, that's probably another time, another topic because there's, you know, because animals don't have a soul.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know.
So, if you guys want to dig a little deeper into that, I'm going to read the headline again just so you guys could look it up. woman receives pig kidney transplant, walks out of hospital days later. Okay, so you guys want to do a little digging on that? That'd be very interesting. I think I might need to do a little digging on that later as well. So now we are going to move into our main topic of the day. Matt, what would you like to discuss today?
Well, I have a family that was like its own science experiment without realizing it. Okay. So I have two children who loved sports and activities and were heavily involved. Okay. They're both adults and they're both doing very, very well. Okay. Mentally, they can handle pressure. They can handle a lot of different aspects in life. And then I have a couple of kids that had no interest in activities and they struggle more. Okay. And, you know, the struggle with difficulties in life, right? Not as prepared to handle those things. So it makes me question, you know, which I think we all agree and we all know, but, you know, maybe we'll explore it a little bit. Physical activity and how it helps not only the body, but the mental state of a person. Because it teaches you so much, right? It teaches you, well, as we know, when you go into a gym, okay, the gym is like the one place you can't cheat, you know, outside of, okay, let's...
The great equalizer.
The great equalizer, right? And even if you are doing steroids, you still have to put in the work, right? Now, I'm still going to call steroids cheating because that's my view on it. Because, you know, if I were... Just to give you an example, it will take me, you know, 2 years to accomplish what I could accomplish 2 months with steroids, give or take. But the point is that you see, it's still the equalizer that you get out of it what you put into it, right? And if you put in a lot of effort and a lot of work, you're going to get the results. And so there's not really too many other places in society that it's so true than it is here, right? Like if you're out in the real world and you're working a job, I've seen people that have progressed up. They had no business managing people, right? But it's who they knew. It's, you know, their dad was the owner of a company, so they jumped a bunch of steps and became the CEO of this company. Some people earn it, some people don't. And so there is not everything is fair and out in the real world. You know, honesty is not always the best way to get ahead. In my, you know, 30 years of working in business, honesty would sometimes be the last thing you'd want to have. So, but in here, that's not the case. If you're in a gym and you're working out, it's 100%. You only get out of it what you put into it. So that means you have to earn it, and it teaches you a lot. It's a very valuable lesson, especially for kids, you know, and it's patience and perseverance. How many times have I heard you say, you know, if someone's got it or they don't, right? Meaning they know they're not, they, as soon as the wind blows, they're gone, right? As soon as any type of difficulty in life, they disappear. And that's what, you know, if you have your kids starting early with athletics and activities and sports, they learn a lot of valuable lessons at a young age that they won't fade away, or they'll have some resolve. You know, it doesn't mean that they stay in the gym the rest of their lives, but they know what's necessary, and they make and they also know how to they can handle life better.
Yeah, I would agree. It's kind of like setting a foundation 100%. When you're young, when you're the most impressionable, when you have the most room and space for knowledge and learning, and your body is growing the most. I was reading the other day about stem cells in the body and how teenagers have some crazy 20 times more stem cells or something than a, you know, 40-year-old adult would have. It's crazy how much they have. And so there's such an opportunity for setting that foundation, building both physically and mentally when you're in those teenage years.
Right.
And I have found through my experience as a trainer that that foundation being built never really goes away.
Mm-hmm.
Most all of the people that come in and are new trainees with us are pretty out of shape.
Mm-hmm.
Almost always. So they wouldn't be coming to us if they were in great shape most of the time. Every once in a while, we get somebody who just loves the push of a trainer and they're already in good shape. But most of the time when they first come in, they're in very poor shape.
Right.
But I can tell in probably one session if the person, even if they're the same amount out of shape, whether they've had a history in athletics or not.
Yes, 100%.
And those people also, the people that have a history of athletics, a lot of times they make amazingly quick progress. A matter of a couple months, you're seeing major changes in strength and even in weight loss. Whereas people who do not have a history of athletics, sports, working out, and they come in, they're coming in for the first time to start, it takes a long time to even seeing progress.
Yeah.
And so I can say from that standpoint, from anecdotally what I see, having that foundation of, oh yeah, I played sports in high school and in college and I was worked out and stuff, but then, oh, I haven't done anything for 20 years and I've gained 80 pounds. But then they come back in and in 6 months they could be, they could lose the 80 pounds and they could be strong as they've ever been.
Right.
Right. And then, but the person who's, who hasn't done that, it's just a lot longer road. And so children, adolescents, teenagers, that age group getting in, setting that foundation is not only going to get them ahead when they're young, it's also going to allow them an easier time to stay healthy down the road.
Here's the other side of it. There's a mental side. And the mental side is that you notice it in your trainees as well, right? We have a person that, and this is kind of speaking to what you just said, we have a person we both know and we both have trained, and they will, soon as they'll be in here, and early on, as soon as they were lifting and they ran into the weight got difficult, they'd quit. They'd stop immediately. They went, they'd be like, why'd you stop? You know, push through that, right? And we've continued to train them for, you know, it's probably going a year, year and a half now. And they have, they're finally learning, and it took a long time, finally learning, like, don't give up. If you're in the middle of a rep and it's getting difficult, don't stop, because there's still enough for you. You could have pushed through that, right? And they, it took them, because they didn't learn that early on, right? That, you know, and but they, because they've discovered that they find mental, it relieves their mental fatigue to come in here of being out in the real world, and that gives them some, you know, anti-depression type medicine coming in here. They suddenly are learning not to give up, that they didn't learn at a young age. Like some of the people that, like when I was young, I went through some extreme training at a young age. I mean, mostly because my coaches were a little on the nutty side. You know, there was no heat warnings when I was a child. That didn't exist. I didn't hear about heat warnings until I got to college.
Yeah, back before AC was invented.
Yeah. He has to go there, doesn't he? Oh, man. Okay, so, yes, before heat was, you know, our air conditioning was invented. But the point is like, I remember some just insane, intense workouts when I was a child, when I was in, you know, high school. Just, I mean, I'm amazed that those are the kind of workouts we used to do. You know, nowadays, doing those type of workouts, I think coaches would get in trouble. So, I mean, it was pushing you not to a limit, but beyond the limit in some. And so, you know, but that taught me a lot, right? You know, it's, you know, when I'm in the gym and I've got, you know, a heavy weight that I'm working with, you know, the only thing that's going to stop me from lifting that heavy weight is where either it's going to come back down. I'm not going to just, you know, I'm going to get right here and then it's going to be a little bit of a challenge and it's going to come down. So the point is like there is the mental fortitude that athletics and sports teaches you at a young age. Very important, not only because it teaches you mental fortitude out in real life. You know, and it's so, and again, it helps depression. 100%.
Yeah. A lot of the same benefits we see in adults, we also see in children with their activity. I would agree completely. I think it's extremely beneficial. I would say for me, it didn't really, well, I mean, it started really young, going all the way back to playing t-ball and stuff, you know, and then it just kind of continues to compound and build from there.
Right.
Started weight training when I was 12. You know, doing.
You started at 12?
12, yes.
Wow. Yeah. No, I was not weight training.
So I was
12.
In sixth grade. Well, it was between sixth and seventh grade. And our little league football coach, he called up the high school. And they had a high school football team had a weight training program over the summers. And he called them up and asked if he could get us in to train with them and go through that. Because that would be good for us. And so the whole summer between sixth and seventh grade year, we trained with the high school football team.
Wow.
And, you know, did all the lifts and all everything. And then we just did it, you know, did it the next year too. And then started high school and did it all through high school.
So did you have any impressive records at 12 and 13 years old?
I do remember that first summer when I was 12. I can't remember. The only thing I remember is at the end of the summer, I went in and I wanted to do a max bench. I wanted to see what I could bench. And I remember I benched 75 pounds. And I was very happy about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was a 10 and a 5 on each side of the bar.
And how much did you weigh?
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea back then.
That's very interesting. Yeah, I was going to think, I said, you know, at 12, 13, you know, tracking. How old were you when you did 405?
22.
Okay, so it was a 10-year process to go from 75 pounds to 405.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, definitely. So, what I think we should kind of talk about too here is obviously it's important, right?
Yeah.
Weight training, exercise, athletics, all of that stuff is extremely important for children.
Mm-hmm.
But there's stages.
Yes.
And so let's kind of talk about what we believe and also some of what the data shows can be done at what ages. Because I did start weight training at 12.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to go back, I think 12 was a good age to start.
Mm-hmm.
However, there was little to no coaching involved in that, right? It was kind of, okay, yeah, we could all show up. We could all lift with them. But, you know, there's probably 50, 60 kids working out in this weight room at the school and, like, two coaches. And it's just there's no coaching, basically.
Yeah, I mean, there's like no bad form all over the place.
Oh yeah, and it's like okay, just spot each other, make sure they don't die, and like, that's basically it. You know,
they're relying on how flexible and gooey they are that they're not going to get injured.
Exactly. So yeah. I would say, for an example, lifting weights is okay to start at 12, but I would make sure it's on either a one-on-one or a very small group, where you have a very good coach who's focused on form first and teaching the form, because it can be dangerous otherwise.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I witnessed any crazy injuries from lifting, but it can happen.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Well, I mean, you know, I know I've had a few college athletes that were ex-college athletes. Most of them were from Division II type schools, but that have come in and they have terrible form. And I'm like, you didn't get better training than this? And you're like, no, this is what they showed us do. And you're like stunned that their trainers and for their sports were didn't have any consideration for form. But that aside, you know, so I think as well, I think 12 years old is appropriate.
You know? I have trained as young as, I don't think I've done strength training with younger than 12, but I have done a 12-year-old before.
Yeah.
Multiple.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's been very successful, but the body control is way worse at that age.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, focusing very intently session after session on correct form, correct tempo, to do it safely. But those are right. habits that then get ingrained. The form gets ingrained in them at that age, and then they always will remember it going forward. I've never really had to, well, I would say this. I had no form coaching either on lifts until I started doing it myself and researching myself, which was when I was 18, 19, coming out of high school.
Yeah.
Because in high school, it was just, we would bench and we would squat and we would do a few accessories, but mainly just bench and squat. And the coaching on bench was push the bar up and, you know, then you're good.
Yeah.
And the coaching on squat was go to parallel. And that was it. And so when I came out of high school, I wanted to keep working out because I enjoyed lifting, was very successful at it. I wanted to keep lifting. But then I'm like, how do I do this on my own? Because I don't know anything. I know to bench. I know to squat. Push the bar up. I squat down to parallel. But what else? So then I started researching, and that started kind of learning form and doing things. But it took a little while to learn the form and get the form down. But once I got it down, it kind of just became second nature. It's kind of like when you go lay on a bench to bench press, you don't have to think about your form.
Right, right.
At first, you do.
Yeah, I do, 100%, yeah.
But then once you get it down, you don't have to think about it. And it's almost like if somebody asked you to do it incorrectly, mm-hmm. you would struggle to do it wrong because you're so used to doing it the right way and it's so ingrained in your brain that way. And that's what's so important about having the form coaching and doing it right from a young age is that it gets ingrained in you, and then that's how you're going to keep doing it all the way the rest of your life. Have you ever tried to fix the form of somebody who's done it wrong for years on end? It's almost impossible.
Almost impossible. Yeah.
You work with them for years, every session trying to, you know, explaining to them, showing them, having them feel the right form, and it's like it doesn't work.
No, I don't. I would say that's more of a male issue than a female issue.
Usually, yes.
Yeah. Because I know females that have done that have worked out before that I've had the opportunity to train, and they're not locked in like that's just not correct. You know, they're not as much. You know, and then they're usually very more as accepting to the change to their form. But guys, man, I tell you what. It's darn near almost impossible. You know, if they've been in a gym a long time and they've locked in on a form, and mostly because guys don't like going backwards.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And that's the same thing with young kids, though, I've found, too. Probably predominantly male, but they have the tendency to want to move too quick on increasing their weight.
100%, yeah.
Oh, well, I benched, you know, 100 pounds, let me try it 110, let me try 120, and they keep going until the form's not good because they want to lift as much as they can, and they don't really understand the process at that age.
Right.
So it's number one, harping on the form, but it's number two, keeping them in check on how much weight they try to do.
Right.
I wouldn't recommend, you know, say you have a child and you have a basement workout area with a rack and a bar and stuff. You don't just let them go down there, shut the door, and just do whatever they want to do, right?
Right.
There's some danger there in trying something that they don't know that they can't handle.
Yeah.
By the time you become an adult, by the time you become in your 20s, you kind of just generally know what you can or can't handle, not only in the gym, but in life in general. But when you're a young kid, and you don't really understand that.
No. So I got you're good at thinking on your feet. I have a question for you.
Okay.
So how does physical activity help with in children behavioral issues like aggressive behavior?
You mean how would physical activity assist in remedying a child that has overly aggressive behavior?
I mean, what would be your thoughts on that if you had to think on your feet?
A male child? I think in that case, it's kind of an outlet. It's a channeling the aggression. In males specifically, aggression is a byproduct of testosterone.
100%, yeah.
And it's inevitable. It would be wrong to say aggression is bad, you should just never be aggressive, because that is not masculine. And we want our young men to grow up to be masculine, but they need to learn to channel the aggression correctly.
Right.
And if not given an outlet to do that, a lot of times that's where you will see the aggression pop up in things where it shouldn't be.
Right.
Aggressive to family, aggressive to friends, aggressive in situations where they should be calm and quiet.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important to give them that outlet, whether it's you get to be aggressive in lifting these weights, you get to be aggressive in tackling some guy on a football field, you get to be aggressive in, you know, wrestling some guy, and, you know, healthy things for teenagers or adolescents, but a chance for them to get that aggression out.
Now, here's one that's, I think, great. I'm thinking of a particular person me and you both know. He was not, he didn't come here. He just recently entered the Army or the military. I don't remember if it was Army or not. And, you know, he pursued to be an MD, a fireman. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Maybe.
Yeah. So, Ricky?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Ricky. So, great guy. Okay. Socially a little shy, but the gym for him became very important to him. And, cause I don't think he got that as a young child, you know, to where he had that social interaction. Right. But as an adult, he learned to value it. It became a very important part of his life. So when you're thinking about your children, you know, activities and sports are good for social interaction, the ability to carry on a conversation. Some of the things, like what we're doing right now, communicating, right? You speak, I speak, we, you know, I don't, I'm not shy. I, you know, I'm not like intimidated. You're not intimidated. We, that comes naturally to us, right? For a lot of people, it doesn't, right? And so when you're in a gym and you're dealing with people that have, they're shy. They're worried about what other people think about them, which is a big issue of what children deal with. They're like, what do they think about me? You know, they're worried about what others think, right? And a gym is a place where, you know, you learn with patience that you get to accomplish the things that, you know, if you're slow and consistent, right, you will achieve, right? So, and it's the same for everyone in the gym. No one got to be looking massive without a lot of work, okay? Or pushing a lot of weight with a lot, without a lot of work. So if you have a kid that's shy and they see these people working hard and they learn to interact with them, that's a great social environment for them. You know, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree, especially, well, I mean, there's two ways to look at it, and there's kind of two types of sports and athletics to get into. There's your team sports, where you're playing on a team. I think that's extremely important anytime there's a team aspect, because you learn not only the communication with the team, how to play for a team, how to work together and collaborate towards a goal. Because that's life right there. I mean, whether it's your spouse, whether it's your coworkers, your friends, you know, you will work together towards a common goal. And being able to to do that and communicate through that's very important. But then there's also the competition aspect of sports, where you're against somebody else most of the time, whether that's a one-on-one sport or still a team sport. And, you know, my wife brought this up the other day because we were watching a football game and some guy, like, hit some other guy really hard, you know, and everybody kind of it was like a big deal, you know.
Right.
And she's like, well, aren't they going to be mad at each other now?
Yeah.
And I said, probably for the rest of the game, but I said, then when the game's over, like, it'll be fine.
Yeah, 100%.
And she's like, well, how do they do that? Like, how are they able to forget about it like that? And I'm like, yeah. That's because, you know, they learn that at a young age of that competition. It's like, okay, when I'm competing against somebody, I have my aggression. I'm trying to beat them. I don't like them in that moment, right? Because they're my competition. I'm supposed to beat them. But then when the competition's over, it ends. And it's like, oh, okay, it's over. So now, like, we're friends again.
Yeah, nice. The guys are great at doing that. I was the same way. When I was played in a flag football league for years when I was in my 20s and early 30s. And I told my wife, I was like, she asked me a similar question about the mentality. I said, you probably don't want to be around me when I step on the field. When I step on the field, I'm not mad anymore. I'm somebody else, you know. And, you know, and I've been hit really hard, and I've hit people really hard. And after the game, we're like hugging it out, you know. It's like nothing ever happened. And guys can compartmentalize like that. And that's not a trait that women can do very well. They can't shut that off. Like, you know, now if it was, you know, something malicious, that's different, right?
Yeah.
But if it's in the context of the game, they just got a great hit on you, good for you,
yeah.
You know? But, you know, you're trying to take someone's knee out, you're specifically trying to really hurt someone, that will linger after the game because now it's becoming personal.
Yeah, and it wasn't in the good friendly competition of the game.
100%.
Right? If the rules of the game are, it's like boxing. Like, the rules of the game are literally to hit people.
Right.
So it's like, you hit the other person, but that was the rule. So you don't take that a hit offensively.
Right.
But if you're just, walking down the street and some dude's real, real mad at you for something and comes over and hits you, like, you're not going to react the same way.
Right. Which, think about that. That's another valuable lesson that teaches kids context, you know?
Yeah.
When to be aggressive and when not to be. Right.
Yeah.
So I think I heard Jordan Peterson say sometime back, he says, a good man is a dangerous man that controls his tempers his aggression, mm-hmm. right? If you don't have aggression, if you're not dangerous, you're not a good man, right? Because that's what keeps balance for the family. The family knows that if you need to step up and show aggression and be violent, then you're a good man because, you know, they know that you will protect them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at all costs. You will lay your life on the line for your family, which will take violent behavior. And so sports kind of teaches that kind of on a underlying level that's safe and no one's going to get, you know, die or anything like that. So the point is that it's sports kind of, military is somewhat like that too. Right. They did a study, and I might have mentioned this in the past. They've done a study to where they compared men and women on a battlefield and mimicked battlefield scenarios. And when the men finished the battle, it was over. They compartmentalized it, put down their guns, next thing to do. Right. They might have come out of there, you know, with the emotions of what battle, which is the worst thing on the planet. They put women in the same scenario, and what happened is that the women couldn't turn it off, right? They couldn't compartmentalize that to where the battle's over, my enemy's dead, move on to the next thing. No, they were shooting the trees, shooting the dead. They couldn't stop, right? So this is the difference of men and women when you talk about those things. But what activities do is that kind of teaches everybody to compartmentalize context, when to be aggressive, when not to be aggressive.
Would you recommend, in your experience, from what you know, both physical and mental, would you have different recommendations for athletic exposure to children, male versus female?
I would. I didn't when I was younger, but I do now.
How would you differ that?
Well, let me tell you a small story, and then I'll answer that question. So my daughter played from the time she was four years old, playing soccer. And she was good, like really good. But that aggression that soccer takes, that attacking style, you know, wasn't always on for her, right? It had to be. I mean, you had to get her almost... When she get really angry, then you'd see, like, when she took something personally, then you would see the kind of aggression you'd want to see in soccer. Okay, boys are like that the moment that they step on the field. The aggression's 110% the moment they step on the field. There's no prodding.
There's no catalyst.
There's no catalyst. They just it's on.
Yeah.
Right. Girls aren't like that. Right. And, you know, the girls that play at the highest level, they may have some of that masculine nature to step on the field and just go, like that, the intensity, the moment they step on the field. But that would be, you're talking for a guy that's, for most guys, that's automatic. For most women, it's not. Okay. So, and I remember Andy Barney, who was my daughter's coach, saying after one season, he'd be trying to get him to play like the guys do. Right. And it just, it's not there. Even the best athletes, some of the athletes that were on Madison's team played pro ball. I mean, they were high level athletes, right? Because they traveled all over the country. This team, those athletes were some of the best of the best in Kansas City. Okay. But even those girls wouldn't turn it on necessarily at the same level the moment they stepped on the field. Okay. The guys, the boys step on the field, man, it was like they're going to rip your heart out. Girls, no. It some of them could do it, but not consistently all the time. And I remember him telling me, he'd be like, I'm not coaching the girls next year. I go, why? Because I just can't get them to play like the boys. You know, even though they were a they were a state championship team. But it was the same problem on both sides of the ball, right? Now, I'm sure I'm going to get some argumentation out there, but I've watched thousands of soccer games, and there's a difference in the aggression. A massive difference. So when it comes to women, your question, how would I approach women in sports? I probably wouldn't have put my daughter in sports. I would have allowed her to do activities and I would have prodded her to choose something, but I probably wouldn't have been like, you know, pushed her as hard as she got pushed, right? I would allow her to participate in the, what you call the club league, the city league, right? Not club league, but like the city leagues where it's like low level playing. You go out and have a good time, experience the aggression, you know, and they'll get into the competition a little bit. Only because I think I'm not so sure playing at the highest level with that much aggression for women is beneficial.
In their development. What do you think about more individual sports? Say the difference between soccer or basketball or volleyball and then golf or weightlifting, something where it's just you yourself, you're working on trying to improve your own performance. There's not really, I mean, there is competition, but not really direct competition.
Right. You know, when it comes to like, you know, golf or tennis or something like that, I probably have somewhat the same, you know, let them progress at their own interest. Like if they really enjoy it, okay. But I think there is we're kind of getting into the nature of man and woman here. And I think the nature of women is competition, intense competition, like trying to get women to compete with the same intensity as men, I don't think is healthy. That's
compete against each other or compete to be good at what they're doing?
Compete at kind of an all-cost type of competition. Like, you know, thousands of hours of, you know, working hard, you know, competing at the very top levels. You know, and I'm not saying this is a hard, fast rule. I just think I question, you know, and we may differ on this, but I question women competing at the very highest level if it's beneficial for them and or society.
Even say if it was like professional golf or something. Like,
right.
You're not competing against, like, yeah, your score is compared to other people's score, but you're not out there against somebody. But you still think that high-level competition, I eat, sleep, and breathe my golf,
mm-hmm.
and it's all I care about, and I'm working relentlessly to try to get better at it. Like, that's what you're saying, avoiding those types of activities during the developmental ages.
Yes. Yeah, and you know, if someone, because it doesn't matter, there's always going to be some female athlete that, you know, even if they were to do kind of the patty cake leagues early on, they're just so naturally good, they're going to, you know, go to the highest level. But now we have both in men and women, or both female and male, where they're training year round, 24. I mean, every month there is no downtime. Okay, that's why my daughter's soccer, there was no downtime, there was no rest. Okay, it was 12 months a year. On, okay, kids, boys handle that better, girls not so much. And I don't think it was my wife, my daughter learned a lot from doing that, and it made her resilient to the world, but it had some negative impacts as well that that fall into the masculine category, which is not healthy for her. So that's why I think sports are great for kids, you know, male and female. But I think how we approach them and in the intensity that we approach them with, my opinion has changed on that.
So would you recommend maybe more of a intentional, more of a seriousness, how you approach athletics in young men, and more of a less serious sort of enjoyment aspect when it comes to young women in athletics, both participation, both because we've talked about the benefits of the exercise, body movement,
100%.
The mental depression, like those are consistent among men and women,
right?
The benefits of the exercise, both physically and mentally,
right?
But maybe we just change a little bit of how we channel it in order to provide optimal benefits to young men versus young women,
right? I think high intensity for girls in sports, you'll get results, but I'm not so sure it benefits them or benefit, because you look at all you have to do is look at the results that we have in society, you know, and I believe a society is a society that produces families and produces children. Well, we have to kind of, you know, someone that's very, very invested in the nature of a woman is to go forth and prosper and to raise children. Right. And I know I'm going to get some hate for this, but hey, I'm traditional.
hate away.
But I think women are, God put them on this planet for a very particular reason, you know, and it's not to, for a lot of women to reach for the sky on being the best athlete on the planet. Okay. Do I think sports have a fantastic effect on kids? 100%. And that's why we're talking about it. But I think high aggression for women, where you're sacrificing your time as the possibility of being a mother and being a career athlete, there's questions for me how valuable that is.
Yeah, and I can see that 100% on like a career level. Talk to me about why it might be a negative to have that even at a student level, at a adolescent level. Say you're in highly competitive sports, but when you're become an adult, you no longer participate in highly competitive sports as a as a female. Is there still, in your opinion, negatives that will come of that experience when they were younger?
Well, I think so. You know, I can speak from experience, it's my anecdotal experience, but I can look around, you know, now, you know, this was not a subject I was getting into, but, you know, I do believe that in society, our natures have kind of been flipped on themselves. And, you know, and men included, you know, we're both male and female genders here have not escaped the ills of society in the last 50 years. But, you know, when we're speaking about athletics and sports, trying to keep it in context, aggression and high intensity is just natural for boys. It just is, right? That's why since the beginning of man, men have always fought the wars. Always. Yeah. 100%. Okay. That is our role. And there's nothing wrong. There's nothing, doesn't make us better. It's just, that's what God designed us to do, is that we fight to protect societies. We fight to protect our families. We fight to protect our wives, our children. That's why we're stronger, faster, you know. You know, it's, that is, I mean, you just look at our physical natures and that's what we do, right? So sports is a natural evolution of that. We love competition. Think of when we were kids. You know, I can hit the ball farther. I can throw it farther than you can. And it's all good and fun, right? So it's just in our DNA, right? I mean, women love competition, but I don't think it's built into their DNA that way to where they will at all costs, you know, reach the highest levels. And when we force it on them, and I'll be just as guilty as anyone else, is that my daughter was a great athlete and I probably pushed her too hard and, you know, it wasn't in her. That was not who she wanted to be. So there was more of a damaging effect than there was a positive effect, right? She was really good when she wanted to be good, right? But she only turned it on when like someone else on the field pissed her off, right? And the more she went on, she just, not what she wanted to do, right? But then she played so hard for those years, she's looking back and like, I don't know if, you know, when you've been pursuing soccer as your future and you don't really like it that much, that means you've been ignoring a lot of other things that you should have been focused on. And then you get to the end of high school and you're like, what do I want to do? Right. So that's kind of the negative side effect of some of this. Cause you only have like maybe 20 people or 30 people on the USA Olympic team, right? Well, how many girls are playing soccer? Okay. So that means there's a lot of, carnage out there of people that have gone down a role. If they don't make it at the highest levels, then there'll be, you know, be a coach on a soccer team or, you know, and again, here's the thing. I am not saying to all the people listening out there, I'm not saying don't put your girl in sports. I'm not saying that. Okay. I just think that there is, I was of the opinion when I was in my 20s and 30s that girls can play really well and go as high as they want. And over time, observation and study, I don't believe that anymore. You know, I think girls need to be approached differently, and that's because we're different. Men and women are different. And when you think about what our roles are on the planet, right? Are we going to adhere to what God's will is for us or not? Right? Because if we're not, we're going to have problems, right? And, you know, a lot of people don't want to hear that. You know, they don't want to hear that, you know, my little girl is different than my little boy, and they need to be approached differently, because they do. So.
I agree completely.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's when it comes to that, and we went off on a tangent there.
No, that's good, and I think it's important to discuss that as well. It's not something that I initially thought about when I was thinking about this topic of children involvement in athletics and weight training and things like that. But as we started to discuss it, you know, it's definitely different.
Yeah.
And how involving young men versus young women in athletics and activities. And so I think it's good that we covered that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like I said, you know, it's going to be some girls, you have to be perceptive as a father. I mean, again, I think the nature of not just a father, but as a human being to be a better human being is to kind of realize when, oh man, I screwed up, you know, and I need to change my ways. And so I constantly reflect on decisions in my life and, you know, and she was my second oldest, and, you know, she's doing well out in Denver. But I would have approached, you know, now being a 57-year-old guy, if I had to do it over again, I would have done it completely different, you know. But, you know, I was sports crazy when I was a kid. I mean, I lived and breathed and, you know, I played football all the time. I mean, I played football into my 30s. You know, I was playing, you know, and I mean, I wish the leagues we were in were tackle, because I love tackle. But, you know, those, you can't play tackle in these leagues in Kansas City. But I was, you know, you didn't know me during that time, but I was playing softball and football and basketball and tennis and golf. And I mean, and it was nonstop. Ironically, during that time, that was early in my marriage, I was miserable. I was playing all these sports. I mean, as soon as I got, hey, we need a guy for softball, boom, I'm there. You know, and I remember my wife would be, and I'd get home, and my wife would want to talk to me about her day, and I'm watching the game. You know, that was a period of my life I was very selfish, you know. So, you know, that kind of, some of that passion was like onto my daughter, because she was a great athlete. And she had the ability to, play college ball, 100%. I mean, when she was young, her coaches looked at her. She said, "Oh, she's already one of the top 5 players in the city." I was like, "Well, don't tell a dad that, you know, because then I'm like, oh man, we got to work hard." So,
what do you think about? And it's a little bit off topic, but what do you think about the role in raising children, mother and father? And then the relationship with how they should raise sons and daughters, right? Because you're taking, what it kind of sounds like to me is that you're maybe taking your masculine tendencies and kind of applying them to your daughter when they probably would apply to your son.
100%.
But you're saying in hindsight, maybe they didn't apply the same to your daughter.
100%, yeah.
And so would that have been something... Or would that be something where the mother might know better in those situations and understand better the thought process? I don't really know. I have very, very limited experience as a parent.
Right.
And
well, you can learn from all my mistakes.
There's a lot of wisdom there.
Yeah. I can hear. Yes. You know, it was just a double entendre of negative. In hindsight, you know, we had moments that were great, you know, where, you know, at the time, you know, Madison wins a game with a winning goal and all that stuff. That's all great. But in comparison to the damage done on the end, could have lived without it, you know. You know, I used to love to watch Madison play. I mean, all the time. But in hindsight, you know, how it's affected her adulthood, I would have 100% changed how I raised her. 100%. Because I think I was somewhat blinded by, I mean, she loves sports and she still does love sports, but not at that level. It's kind of like, it's just that men are here on intensity and girls are here, right? So if you're trying to take this intensity and put it in that child, it doesn't work out well. Because you're, you know, highly masculine women aren't great for marriage. They're not great for society. It doesn't work well.
Men should be masculine. Women should be feminine.
100%.
Shouldn't be the other way around. There are only two genders. You're either a man or you're a woman. And that's the things we believe here. That's the things I believe.
Yes. So I might get a lot of hate. We might lose a few people, but, you know, we have to... Truth is truth.
We speak the truth.
That's right.
That's very interesting. I think the main takeaways are get your kids involved in athletics, you know, some competition type sports, you know, individually, training, you know, lifting weights, running, different movements that challenge their body and their development. Get them involved with a very good coach. The quality of coaching is probably the most important thing because you want them to learn the right way. They're going to carry this with them the rest of their lives. The things that they learn are going to be ingrained in their mind, and they're never really going to forget them. You're going to set them a foundation that they're going to be able to use forever. You're also going to want to maybe consider differences in how you push your sons and your daughters in their athletics. And
yeah, 100%.
You may lean more into that intensity and aggression for your sons. You may take a more laid-back approach with your daughters as they're not as intensity and aggression prone. But getting them involved is the most important thing, and start at a young age.
Yeah, start at a young age. You know, my daughter was naturally leaned towards sports. You know, she played softball, volleyball, did gymnastics, you know, did I say basketball? Yeah. So, you know, she was, and I remember one time she was in like four or five sports at one time, and I was like, okay, we can't continue doing this because we don't live at home anymore. But you know, the point is that I, as a father, you need to allow them just to enjoy the game. Okay. Just let them enjoy the game. Even if you see that they have talent, that doesn't always mean that they're supposed to play at the highest levels. Because sometimes they're just talented kids because they came from your line. So, you know, understand the natures of men and women are different. And you can't approach them the same.
Absolutely. Well, any last thoughts?
No, I think we just scratched the surface on that, but that went in a good direction, I think.
I agree, and it's another topic that we could even circle back to down the road. And for you guys listening, it would be interesting to do a little deeper dive and do some thinking on it yourself, because, Matt, you brought up some things that I know I'm going to have to marinate on this week and think about.
Yeah.
Very good podcast, a lot of wisdom coming from that side of the table.
Oh, yeah, I appreciate it. I appreciate it, but it all came through pain.
Well, yeah. Well, so. We better get off here because it is 3 minutes after 12. The Chiefs have already kicked off.
Oh, man.
So might have to catch some of the Chiefs game here this afternoon. And this is our last show before Christmas. So I want to say to all you guys listening, have a Merry Christmas. And we will be back with you guys next week with another episode, one more before the new year.
Great, great ending. Merry Christmas, guys. Bye-bye.
Hey, look at you. You've completed another milestone by finishing this episode of Loading the Bar. Your future self thanks you profusely. Loading the Bar is podcasted from Lee Summit, Missouri. Email us at cpt.kansascity@gmail.com. Forge ahead and share your progress. And we'll see you back here for another episode of Loading the Bar.